I want to speak to Gráinne Taggart from Amnesty International. Gráinne, good morning.
Good morning.
Gráinne, just for some people who've been listening to us talk about abortion and debates and discussions and fetal abnormality and ongoing rows and wrangles at Stormont, just in a couple of sentences, remind us where exactly we are in terms of legislation here.
Okay, so the Department of Justice has consulted on changing Northern Ireland's abortion laws in cases of fetal abnormalities and where a pregnancy arises from sexual crime, such as rape and incest. The Department of Justice has confirmed in an assembly answer, I think 2 weeks ago, that it has a draft paper on that legislation in cases of fetal abnormality, that's what they'll be taking forward, and that paper is now ready to go to the executive. So really then it's up to the DUP and Sinn Féin to allow that paper to get on the executive agenda, or to enable it to get on the executive agenda, and for that bill to progress to the Northern Ireland Assembly.
But this doesn't cover sexual crime.
It doesn't cover sexual crime. The reason the Department of Justice gave at the time was that it's quite complex in terms of how you write that into law. So in the interest of proceeding sooner rather than later on some fronts that it consulted on, that it would be taken forward this fetal abnormality and revisit the issue of sexual crime.
Amnesty International will be making a contribution in the court over the next 3 days. Where does Amnesty International stand on abortion?
Well, Amnesty International, alongside the other interveners, has made a written submission to the court, and that is to help inform the judge's considerations on this matter. I mean, as Amnesty, we are very clear that whilst we appreciate this is a difficult subject for many, but the reality is that our laws date back to the 19th century. You know, they date back to 1861. They carry the harshest criminal penalties in Europe, as you have alluded to, life imprisonment for both the woman and anyone assisting in that procedure. And they fail to protect women who have been raped or victims of incest, or whose pregnancies have been given a fetal diagnosis. Now, that is flies in the face of international human rights standards and what they say access should be. And we're saying very clearly that whether we do this through the courts or through the Assembly, we are determined to bring Northern Ireland's abortion laws into the 21st century. The reality that we have here is that up to 2,000 women leave Northern Ireland every year to access termination of pregnancy services. And that reality really is a damning indictment of the executive's failure to prioritise women's healthcare. So, and you know, given the inaction of our Assembly to date, women have, like Sarah Ewart, have no option but to turn to the courts for a remedy.
Yes, Sarah Ewart is the woman who was highly profiled in a number of news outlets with regards to what she went through. Just remind us of what she went through.
Yeah, well, Sarah Ewart was a newly married woman. She had tried successfully to get pregnant and was given the devastating news at a 20-week scan that the fetus had unfortunately not developed its brain, only part of it had developed, and its skull. And in those circumstances, there was no medical intervention that could be made to save the life then of that fetus. Now, the laws in Northern Ireland meant that Sarah's only option was to continue with the pregnancy that she was told would not result in a viable life, or to pay privately and travel to England, as she did, to access a termination of pregnancy services. And that, you know, not only was Sarah, did she have the devastating news of the fact that her pregnancy wasn't going to result in a life at the end of it, but then she had the additional trauma of having to leave the medical profession in Northern Ireland, who knew her case history, who she was familiar with, and travel to another country where she then wasn't familiar, to a clinic, and access the service provision there. And that service provision she should have been able to access here at home, but our laws didn't permit it.
Sarah's an example of, I suppose, a groundswell of opinion giving more understanding to the idea of fetal abnormality. But Amnesty International goes much further than that.
No, I mean, our campaign in Northern Ireland, the My Body, My Rights campaign, is campaigning for a change in the law in cases of fetal abnormality and sexual crime. That's what we're calling for. But if we were to get that change, that would bring Northern Ireland in line with international human rights standards.
But you're not calling for the 1967 Act here?
Oh, no, Amnesty International doesn't endorse any specific piece of legislation. And let me be very clear that our campaign here in Northern Ireland is calling for the law to be changed in the circumstances that I've just outlined. You know, that's the limits of the campaign in Northern Ireland.
Is that because opinion in Northern Ireland tends to be pro-life?
No, I mean, the opinion in Northern Ireland, I would argue, is quite to the contrary. It's really because Northern Ireland does not meet the minimum international human rights standards. So what we're trying to do is bring Northern Ireland in line with that.
Yes, but opinion in Northern Ireland doesn't tend to favour abortion on demand.
Well, I mean, I have to even challenge that term, abortion on demand, and, you know, and what's meant by that. I mean, I think that, I suppose that reinforces a very damaging stereotype of women, that this is somehow a decision that a woman will come to lightly and will demand access to, you know, that service provision. There's obviously the arguments there in terms of pro and anti-choice arguments, and of course we are a pro-choice organisation, but our campaign in Northern Ireland is about bringing our laws into line with minimum human rights standards, which is why we've been given support to Sarah Yurt and have done so in her intervention to the High Court.
And a number of presentations, as you've suggested, will be made to the court and to this judicial review, including from the Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child and Precious Life to pro-life groups, and they'll be very clear with regards to what they'll be saying. They've guested on this programme and programmes like this in the past. Not available to speak to us just at this moment this morning, but they're not refusing to come on, they're just simply not available to speak to us at this moment in time. Their voice will be clear as well in the court, and most people, of course, a very clear understanding of where they're coming from on it. What can the judicial review do? After the 3 days, what can happen?
Well, given that this is quite a complex matter, we would expect that the judge in this case will reserve judgment to take time to consider the arguments that have been set before him, it's Judge Horner, and then will at a later point then offer that judgment. Now, what that judgment, if it's favourable, will mean is that women like Sarah, who unfortunately is at a high risk of this reoccurring, could access this service provision at home. But the difficulty with a High Court judgment vis the need for Assembly legislation is that women accessing these services following a favourable ruling will be subject to the woman and the medical profession having knowledge of that ruling, and that they can access that service provision now lawfully in Northern Ireland. So what this will offer, meanwhile, I would describe as a bridging mechanism. It doesn't remove the need for the Assembly to legislate. They also need to do that. But what it will do is give that protection to women in law in the meantime.
And they can impose it. It doesn't have to. The court can impose it. This doesn't have to go through the Legislative Assembly.
Well, if there was a favourable ruling, yes, it would mean that the court has said that it would be legally permissible for a woman such as Sarah Yurt to access a termination of pregnancy in the circumstances subject to this challenge. So fetal abnormality or serious malformation of the fetus, and also where a woman is pregnant as a result of a sexual crime.
When will the decision be made? The 3 days start today, finish on Wednesday, but when do you expect a decision?
I mean, we simply don't know, because obviously the courts, you know, go into recess, but hopefully at the end of this 3-day hearing, we will at least have an indication as to when that ruling is likely to come, but at this point it's too early to say.
Okay, Gráinne Taggart from Amnesty International, thank you. Bernie Smith from Precious Life is available and will speak to us right after this. This is U105, good morning. We're speaking about the judicial review into Northern Ireland's abortion law. It will get underway this morning in the High Court in Belfast. The Human Rights Commission says the legislation should be changed to allow abortions to take place in certain circumstances such as rape. It's being backed by Amnesty International, the Human Rights Commission, on this. Bernie Smith from Precious Life, however, obviously takes the opposite view and is heading in towards the court as we speak. Bernie, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Bernie, what does Precious Life or anyone with your opinion on abortion have to offer the people who find themselves in the difficulty similar to the young woman who raised this issue in the first place?
Well, regardless of what we offer, Frank, and it's very clear that we offer more than abortion, the point is abortion is not a human right. It's the deliberate destruction of a human person. And there is no international legal obligation to provide access to abortion. So what's happening today is Amnesty International, Human Rights Commission, are bypassing democracy in the process of bringing abortion in by the back door. It's not wanted nor needed in Northern Ireland. From the moment of conception, each unborn child is by its nature a human being. So we would be concerned what's happening here today is the overriding of democracy and so-called Human Rights Commission, who are out to protect the human rights of unborn child by pushing to legalise abortion here.
But should there not be a recognition of the fact that women who have fatal fetal abnormality or women who have been raped, a recognition of their right to request an abortion here where they live?
Well, when we request any abortion for whatever reason, we have to remember there's an unborn child there. There is the right of an unborn child who must be taken into consideration. That's why we have legislation here, and that's why we in Northern Ireland are one of the safest places in the world for a mother to give birth. This must be recognised. This is not a medical issue or a health issue. This is an issue where you have the Knights of Amnesty and the Human Rights Commission pushing and bypassing democracy to change the law here. In those very rare cases where a mother may be pregnant as a result of crying a disabled baby, or in the case of rape, we must provide better care and support for those mothers. And that is what is happening at Stormont at this time. The Department of Health are providing a better care pathway for women with pregnancies with babies who have fetal abnormality.
But do you not recognise? Do you not recognise their rights? Do you not recognise the rights of those individual women to have the choice in those incredibly challenging circumstances?
But abortion is not a right. It's not a human right. It's wrong. It's wrong in the process to tear an innocent unborn child from his mother's womb. So we must always provide a better way, and we must provide better than abortion. But we can see from the results, even recently, of the figures in the UK, where over 90% of disabled unborn babies are aborted because they're disabled. These are not cases where there's life-threatening mental or physical illness to a mother. This is a case of the deliberate destruction of innocent unborn children. There is a declaration, the Declaration on the Rights of the Child, that clearly says that unborn child must be protected before as well as after birth. And we will argue this we have argued this and put this forward through our submission in this court process.
How will you react if the judicial review goes against you?
Well, it goes without saying, Frank, and we will challenge this if it means going to an appeal. That would be the intention from this very moment. That we, as third-party interveners, we have just the right to submit in a written format. But if this in any way changes our legislation or brings abortion into the back door, we will be willing to challenge this through an appeal, as will others, I would imagine, as well. The Society for the Protection of Unborn Child is also involved in this case. So it's a challenge, but I would say that democracy must be upheld and every unborn child must be protected as well as before as well as after birth. Right? But I'm just about to pull in to go into the court here. So hopefully I'll speak to you again. Thank you for this opportunity.
Bernie, thank you for taking the call for us.